from VH1's Rock of Love, and this is Talk of Love, the new podcast. This isn't just reality, this is real life.
Hey everyone, it's Lacey motherfucking Skulls, and this is Talk of Love. I am really, really, really excited about today's guest. I know a few months ago on Talk of Love, I had mentioned to you guys that I was working on getting one of the producers to come on. And, you know, the producers have just always have so many different projects going on. So it took a little bit of time, but I am pleased to announce that today, our guest is going to be Matt Odgers, who is the executive producer of all of the Of Love shows. And I am so, so thrilled. This is going to be such an amazing conversation. So I will be bringing him on in a few minutes. In the meantime, I wanted to let you guys know about a campaign that I am doing regarding Talk of Love. So one thing that has been particularly heartbreaking for me is given the fact that everybody's just experienced incredible and awful hardships because of this pandemic. And, you know, we've got Christmas coming up right around the corner. And I know that money has really been a huge issue for millions of Americans who have either had to, you know, close their jobs or, you know, what have you because of the pandemic. So with Christmas around the corner, I decided that Talk of Love is going to do the Toys of Love campaign, in which you guys are going to get to be a part of it. And basically what's going to happen is if you click on the link below, if you go to the description below this YouTube video, there will be a link. And if you click on it, then it will take you to my personal Amazon page. And from there, there will be a wish list that will be all toys for boys and girls of different ages. All you have to do if you want to participate is you select one of the toys that you would like to donate to a child in need, and it will be sent to me. And I will take all of the toys before Christmas, and I will be working with local fire stations and with other nonprofits. And I will make sure that all these toys go to a family and children who are struggling right now so that they will have a Christmas. So I'm really excited about this. And another thing that will be a benefit for you guys who donate toys is if you donate a toy, for every toy that you donate, I will not only do a shout out for you, but I will shout out whatever message that you want, within reason, of course, don't get too crazy. But in other words, if you want to do a shout out to a loved one, to a boyfriend, to a girlfriend, to a friend, if you want to just shout out to you or to your dog or anything that you guys can think of, I will shout out not only your name, but your message as well if you donate a toy. And then I'm going to film all the toys being delivered, and it's going to be really great. So I'm excited about it. Because, it, you know, as I said, it's heartbreaking to think that there's families right now struggling or worrying, how am I going to make my child's Christmas a good one? So if we can participate in that, then, you know, that'll be really rewarding. So Toys of Love, make sure to click on that link and go to my Amazon. I appreciate you guys so much. Now, I want to give you guys a little history lesson before we bring on our guest. I want to give you a little history lesson about 51 Minds and all of these production companies and the people that were a part of them, primarily Mark Cronin and Chris Abrego. I know you guys keep hearing those guys' names over and over again throughout the podcast. It's a pretty interesting history lesson. So I just want to give you guys some insight before I get into this conversation with Matt Odgers. So I'm going to grab my notes here. So Matt Odgers, he is a major player in the television world. He's been producing shows since 1999, and he really has a long and extensive career. He worked on the Of Love shows for 8 years, and he was, as I said, he was a major player in all of them, including Flavor of Love, Rock of Love, I Love New York, Daisy of Love, Charm School, I Love Money, Megan Wants a Millionaire, Real Chance of Love, For the Love of Ray J, Frank the Entertainment, Basement Affair, and that's just literally to name a few. I mean, he's really been heavily involved in all these shows. So the company, as you guys already know, that did all these shows is 51 Minds. So let's go backwards in time and talk about how 51 Minds came to be, because it's kind of an interesting story. So we'll start with Mark Cronin, who is one of the two key guys of this production company. So Mark Cronin, his first notable job was in 1991, where he worked for Howard Stern. And he then became a writer on MTV show Singled Out. Do you guys remember that show with Chris Hardwick and Jenny McCarthy? So he worked on that. He worked on a few other shows on various networks after that. And then in 1997, Mark Cronin founded his own production company called Mindless Entertainment. So remember that, Mindless Entertainment. Now, Chris Abrego, he actually got his start in television in a way that we would have all would have been more predictable than, you know, like Howard Stern. That's kind of a unique and kind of cool thing. But Chris Abrego just really dove right into reality television. He was working for the production company Bunim Murray, which is a really major player in the reality television world, because they were all about the MTV shows, including like The Real World, Road Rules, Making the Band, those types of shows. So that was Bunim and Murray. That was the shows that Chris Abrego worked on to get his start. So then after that, Chris Abrego, he created his own production company called Brass Ring, which later became 51 Pictures. So after that, Mark Cronin and Chris Abrego met each other through Chris's agent. So remember, Mark had the production company Mindless Entertainment. Chris had 51 Pictures. So they decided to collaborate. And that's where 51 Minds, that's where that title came from. So so it was right around 2003, 2004, depending on which source you read, when 51 Minds came about, when Chris and Mark's companies, two companies, merged together. So together, they created Surreal Life. And interesting, I didn't know this. Surreal Life was originally created for the WB network. But then obviously they moved over to VH1 and started doing all of love shows. So how does Matt Odgers fit into all of this, today's guest? So during all this time, Matt, along with a guy named Scott Teddy, and I actually might be pronouncing that wrong. It's T-E-T-I, but I'm just going to say Teddy for now. So Matt and Scott started working on the Of Love shows together, starting with Flavor of Love. So Matt, he's worn many hats, but he eventually got into the role of executive producer. And then Scott was one of the editors. And so Matt and Scott just became buddies. They worked really well together. They were very creative together. And so they were aware of that when that was going on. So meanwhile, I'm going to introduce another company to you guys. There's another company called Endemol Shine. Endemol Shine is a gigantic, gigantic production company. So how that started was there was a Dutch-based production company called Endemol. And then there was another company that was also Dutch-based called Shine. Eventually, Endemol and Shine, they joined together to become Endemol Shine. What's interesting about Shine is that the so you guys, obviously, you know who Rupert Murdoch is. He is a gazillion, billion, trillion, million, billionaire. And he owns like everything in the world. He has literally hundreds of media outlets, published outlets. He has all kinds of like news entities. He runs companies like Sky News, 21st Century Fox. Like Rupert Murdoch is a giant as far as the media world is concerned. And he has a daughter. The daughter's name is Elizabeth. And so the Shine Group was Rupert Murdoch's daughter's Elizabeth's company. And so she was specifically a chairperson. So Endemol and Shine got together and became Endemol Shine. And that happened in 2015. When that happened, Endemol and Shine coming together, Endemol Shine became huge and just started buying up all these other production companies. So when they bought up the production companies could still continue to exist. It's just that Endemol Shine owned all of them. So 51 Minds was doing its thing. And then in 2008, Endemol Shine acquired 51 Minds. And it was like an insane, insane deal. It was one of the highest paying buyouts, basically, that there is as far as this kind of these kind of production companies go. Reportedly, 51 Minds was sold for $200 million to Endemol Shine. So after that happened, that was in 2015, 51 Minds did continue, even though it's now owned by Endemol Shine. 51 Minds continued. Mark Cronin actually continued staying with 51 Minds for a little while. Chris Abrego, here's what's really cool. Chris Abrego ended up kind of leaving 51 Minds, but really he just went over to Endemol Shine, who now owns 51 Minds. But Chris Abrego just like went up the ranks really quickly in Endemol Shine. And in 2014 is when he joined. He became the co-chairman and co-CEO of Endemol North America. And then in January 2016, Chris Abrego was named co-chairman of Endemol Shine Americas. And in November 2016, Abrego became CEO of Endemol Shine North America and chairman of Endemol Shine Americas. So like that's huge, which is just really cool. Like Chris Abrego, he was such a great guy. I really loved him. Such a nice person and so talented. And just to watch him climb and climb and climb up the ranks is really, really cool. So while that was happening, as I said, Mark Cronin stayed with 51 Mines for a bit, but then he ended up, eventually he left 51 Mines right around 2014. He ended up being the founder of his own company, production company called Little Wooden Boat Productions. And Mark Cronin ended up producing the hit show Below Deck, which is on the network Bravo. So that's really cool. Everybody's doing awesome stuff. So so Matt Odgers, so back to him and Scott. Matt got his, in his early career, he was producing shows like Blind Date. Do you guys remember Blind Date? We've actually talked about that show quite a bit. I feel like a number of the cast members from the Of Love shows were all like on Blind Date at one point. But that was such a fun show. So Matt Odgers worked on that. So Scott, the guy I mentioned earlier, who I said Scott and Matt really, you know, worked well together on Flavor of Love. Scott, he began his career as an editor on shows like Growing Up Gotti. Do you guys remember that one? And The Simple Life. So that was where Scott was working. So Scott and Matt Odgers worked while working on 51 Mines together. And then in 2012, they left 51 Mines. They went off and produced and worked on a bunch of other shows. But in 2015, the two of them founded Left Hook Media. So so Left Hook Media has a lot of very successful shows on different networks like Bravo and USA Network and CNBC. What's interesting though is Left Hook Media eventually was also bought by Endemol Shine. So that happened in 2016. Endemol Shine signs Left Hook Media to production deal. And I actually found a quote by Chris Abrego himself about that deal and specifically about Matt and Chris. Matt and Scott. Chris Abrego says, "I'm personally thrilled to have both Scott and Matt back working with me and with our extended team here at Endemol Shine. They are two of the most creative, hardworking guys in this business, and they've produced nearly every type of unscripted show imaginable. They are already off and running with several series coming down the pike." So that's what Chris said when Endemol Shine bought up their company. So I thought that was really cool. So, you know, Matt is just, has just been such a major player in this, and he's just a good guy. And I'm so excited that he's going to be coming on the podcast. I have so many questions for him. So without further ado, please welcome Matt Odgers. Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm good, Lacey. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I'm so excited. Fans have been requesting one of the producers forever now. So I'm super stoked that you're here.
Yeah, well, thanks. I love the fans. You know, the fans for the show have always been great. They've always been, you know, so supportive of the brand and so just, you know, just so in, you know, so, you know.
Yeah, I feel like they're almost like a cult following. I mean, they're so loyal. They're so into these shows. And what's really interesting to me that I didn't anticipate, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this. I mean, the shows were all huge, and they were huge in the moment. And they stayed huge for a couple of years. You know, VH1 would do these marathons, that sort of thing. But here we are like 10, 11, 12 years later. And what's amazing is the shows are still huge. Like old fans are still rewatching them. But then we're getting new fans who were like children when these shows came out, and they're adults now and they're watching it. I mean, did you anticipate that this show was going to be this popular for like this many years later?
I don't know if I knew it was going to be this popular this many years later, but when we were making the first Flavor of Love, like when we were making the first pilot for Flavor of Love, like I was shooting it and going, this is going to be enormous. I mean, I told people when we finally were allowed to do the series in the first production meeting, I told everybody on the crew, I said, this is going to be the funniest show you'll ever do. And people looked at me like skeptically because we hadn't shot a frame of it, you know, but I shot the pilot first and it was hilarious. Like people trying not to laugh so they didn't blow the shot or blow the sounds, you know, cameramen like trying not to laugh while they're shooting, but still shooting. So it was that much fun.
That's amazing. I feel like when you're in the creative world, whether it's television or music or film, I feel like it's one of those things, if you're a creator and you manage to create something that's just amazing, I feel like when you know it's good, you know it's good.
Oh yeah, you get that tingling, you know, you get that feeling that like, oh, this is good. It's making me emote while I'm doing it, whether it's, you know, whether it makes you cry or laugh or angry or whatever, it's making you feel it while you're doing it. And that's the greatest. I mean, that's why we do it. That's to keep getting that charge is why you keep doing it.
That's so cool. Yeah, that totally makes sense to me. I'll tell you, before I was ever even invited to do Rock of Love, before it was even like a thought in my head of doing reality television, I got into this brand of television through the shows Surreal Life. And I was obsessed with Surreal Life. I loved those shows. It was such a great cast of characters. And of course, you know, Flavor of Love and then Strange Love and all those shows. I was addicted, just like everybody else. And I had Cocktail on recently, as you know, winner of For the Love of Ray J. And she was also on the first season of Bad Girls Club. And, you know, I got to be honest, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I'll tell it to you. I tried watching Bad Girls Club and I tried watching Real Housewives, all of those shows. And the big difference for me between those shows and shows like, you know, Flavor of Love and all of that, I felt like Bad Girls Club was just so aggressive and so angry. And it wasn't fun or funny. It was just super hardcore, intense, aggressive. And I got to a point where I'm like, I can't watch this. Like, it doesn't make me feel good, you know? And I know the shows were hugely popular, but then when you watch Flavor of Love and compare it, even when there's drama, even when there's girls having confrontations, it's still freaking hilarious. It's not like makes you uncomfortable or it's not upsetting to watch. It's so funny, even the way they do confrontations, and especially characters like New York and Hottie. So did you guys like know that it wasn't going to be Jerry Springer style? It was going to be more humorous. How did you make that happen? Was that just the casting?
No, it wasn't just the casting, actually. We came at the shows with humor in mind. And people hadn't really been doing that. I mean, I've been doing that on Blind Date. I don't know if you remember the dating show. So that was a dating show. It was a reality show. And it was a comedy. I mean, we were all comedy writers on that show. We didn't know how to produce reality TV. Nobody really did back then. But they were like, we'll teach you how to do that part, but we need you to be able to write and make it funny. And that's what we did. And I did that for 5 years before I came and joined Chris and Mark and started doing their shows. I did that on Surreal Life 3. And they had done Surreal Life 1 and 2, and they were funny guys, and they wanted us to be funny. So then we just started working together, and it was always coming at it from a comedic approach. So through development, it was always about how ridiculous could it be. I mean, the idea of putting Flavor Flav in the Bachelor spot was a ridiculous idea. And the girls didn't know the first season who it was going to be when he popped out of the car. So it was always coming at it from comedy. So development, casting them, we're looking for the biggest characters who are fun and funny and that we want to watch. And then, you know, when we put the shows together and all the challenges were designed to be funny, all the dates were designed to be funny. And then, you know, when we got into post, it was all about cutting for comedy. The music was all to be funny. You know, everything was going for the joke. We still had to tell the story, but it was like, let's get in and be funny. Let's tell the story as quick as we can. And then let's get funny on the way out and have everything be funny in between. And that was, you know, what we were going for. So it's the whole brand is that. And that just made it lighter. So when girls did pop off and start yelling at each other or try to throw each other off a balcony or something like that, one, we tried to contain that. We always, you were on set. You had a big speech the first day. Like if you're in a fight, if you put your hands on somebody, you're out. If you make somebody do that to you, if you instigate that, you're also out. We were not encouraging people to fight. It just happened because people are in that bubble and it's a little crazy in there sometimes.
Right. Absolutely. And I'll vouch for that. You guys were really, really on it with keeping that from happening, which I thought was, I mean, of course, things are going to happen regardless of what you try to do, but you guys really made a big effort and you guys told us over and over again, you cannot touch each other. You cannot hit, you cannot push. you know? So I thought that was really important. And it also makes everybody feel safe, you know, which you can have the confrontations and know you're not going to get punched in the face. So that's a good thing. So before you came on, I actually gave everybody the whole rundown, the little history lesson of 51 Minds and Chris Abrego and Mark Cronin, all the amazing things those guys have done, and your career as well. I want to get into a little bit of your background. And specifically, I want to know what influenced you as far as this line of work goes. Like, did you always know you wanted to do television? And if so, what shows did you watch when you were younger? Because I was born in 1976. So I kind of have this like idea that you were watching like Chuck Woolery and, you know, The Dating Game and stuff like that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. The idea that I was watching Chuck Woolery and stuff, I did see those shows and I know of those shows and all of that. But I was originally a comedy writer before I was a producer. I grew up watching, you know, comedy on television. I grew up watching Benny Hill, and grew up watching Sanford and Son, and I grew up watching Fat Albert, and I grew up watching Good Times, and I grew up watching all of those shows. And those really influenced a lot of what I did and what I've done. They influenced a lot of that comedy and kind of, you know, I mean, those are shows that have big, loud characters. And that's what I've always gravitated towards. And, you know, and that's, you know, where I think a lot of, there's a lot of rich comedy in that. And now, and then when I came to Blind Date and I started doing reality, and then you find that you can go ahead and find those big, rich characters in the real world, because when people get a camera, some people, when they get a camera pointed at them, really kind of grow exponentially. So then that was kind of a new light, and I've been in reality TV ever since. I've never gone back to scripted since then.
That's so cool. How fun. That's awesome. And you guys really, I mean, you've done such a great job putting a very talented team of producers and writers and editors together, but also like the cast. I mean, they're incredible. And I didn't fully appreciate how great the cast was until I started having people coming onto this podcast and just seeing these like huge personalities. And I mean, you guys just did such an amazing job with that. It's just all the way around. I also want to ask you, I've got my little notes here. I know what I was going to ask you. I personally know what an executive producer does for television, but for the fans out there that are not familiar with that kind of terminology, can you tell them what exactly you did for these shows as an executive producer? But you also did you had other titles as well, correct?
Sure. Yes. Well, when I started out with Chris and Mark, I was the story producer, and then kind of took over the story department. But at that time, it was a very small company. There was only about six of us. And they didn't really have a development department. It was just Chris and Mark would come up with ideas. But once they started running a company that had multiple shows, they couldn't be expected to also be generating all those ideas. They still did generate a lot of them. But then I kind of took over the development department, became kind of their go-to executive producer for everything. So they would come and say, hey, we want to do a show with Flav, but we don't know what it is. So let's work on that. And then we would kind of try to come up with the ideas for what that could possibly be. They said, we want to do a show with Chris Knight and Adrian Curry. What is it? You know, and I would go from, you know, this is what the show is going to look like. This is what the title is going to be. This is what makes it funny, and put together and help generate all the sales material that would then go sell it to the network. And sometimes that was easy, you know, Flavor of Love. We just told them what the idea was and then had funny pictures of Flav, like in a hot air balloon with a girl and on a horse with a girl. And it was so funny in the room. They're like, yeah, sure, we're going to do that. you know, that was like for Flavor of Love 2 and Flavor of Love 3. Flavor of Love 1, I had to do a pilot and all that kind of stuff. So it was once it got easy, it was easier. But I started in the sales. I was the showrunner, so I was in the field. You know that. I was in the field every day. I was working with the team that was producing the show, but also working with the team in posts. And then I would take it back and I would oversee it in post and go all the way to delivery. So for a long time there, I was the showrunner from development through delivery of those series. And that's, you know, people don't get to do that very often. I was really fortunate. You know, Chris and Mark found me at a time where they really had that opening and just a string of success it was beginning. And I bless them for it and thank them for it so much. I mean, it was so fun for me, but also, you know, great for my career.
That's so cool. Yeah, I would imagine that because you had all that freedom to do what you wanted, you could really utilize all of your talents and all of your ideas and everything and just really go full throttle. Like you're not bound by your job title, so to speak.
Right. I kind of had my finger in everything.
That's
but also,
awesome.
I mean, such a great wealth of talented people around me then too. And the editors were fantastic. You know, and they're all off doing other things and very successful now and running shows themselves and all that kind of stuff. And my producers, my story producers in the field, the people that you would talk to on a daily basis, they were all great, you know, and have now all become executive producers and running shows and doing that themselves. You know, my directors were fantastic. Just everybody.
That's
really
great.
It was a really great team.
That's so cool. I definitely would agree with that. So how did you end up meeting Chris Abrego and Mark Cronin?
They hired me. Well, actually, Ben Samick, who is the one of the guys behind the curtain. Nobody ever hears of Ben Samick, but Ben Samick was, you know, Chris's right hand in everything. And to that point is the COO of Endemol Shine North America now.
He has done huge stuff. It's so cool to see where he has gone after 51 Minds.
So Ben hired me. He hired me and two other people to be the story team on Surreal Life 3. And
okay.
That was with Bridget and Flav.
Nice. That's awesome.
So I kind of became Flav's producer and Bridget's producer for that little brief time, and then did Strange Love and then Flavor of Love and then all the spinoffs that came out of those shows and out of Surreal Life.
When Bridget and Flav came together romantically, it seemed like it was pretty quick right out the gate on Surreal Life, which of course got Strange Love going, which got Flavor of Love going. Bridget Nielsen is such an icon and this like 9-foot-tall Scandinavian goddess. And then, you know, Flavor Flav, this hype man from Public Enemy, who I always tell people, anybody who walks into a room wearing Viking horns and yelling their own name, I need to be friends with that person. That's amazing. But at the same time, those two have such gigantic personalities and gigantic careers, yet they are quite opposite from one another in a number of ways. Were you guys shocked that connection happened? Like, were you expecting it? Was it planned? Was it just, did it just happen?
We weren't expecting it at all. Look, there's one thing that you have to remember is like we plan when we do those shows, we plan for the program things to happen. So the way that I like to put it is we build a box, right? We find a bunch of nuts, we put them in the box. Then every once in a while we put something in the box for the nuts to play with. We shake up the box a little bit. But what the nuts do in the box is up to the nuts. You being one of the nuts.
I've been called worse.
Right. Nuts are delicious and wonderful. Everybody likes them.
It's full of protein.
So
that's what I say.
But anyway, so what you guys did, and you know this, like we didn't tell you to go get in a fight with Heather.
Right.
Get in a fight with Heather because something else had happened during your time in the house. Right. We didn't tell Bridget to fall in love with Flav. She walked in the house. She was trying to talk. He kept interrupting her. She smacked him on the face and he smacked him back. And that's how Bridget Nielsen falls in love with him.
That's amazing.
And I'm not saying physical violence. I'm saying if you stand up to Bridget Nielsen and don't take her shit, she falls in love with you.
She respects you. Yeah.
That respect, but there's also a certain heat when that's involved with Bridget Nielsen that, you know, and then we were flabbergasted when they started becoming a couple. And that's why we're like, well, we have to document that relationship. And that's where Strange Love came from.
I would have loved to have been inside you guys' brains, hearing your thoughts when that all started to take place, the relationship between Flav and Bridget. Cause like, oh my God, is this actually happening? This is amazing.
It was quite bizarre. It was quite bizarre.
Incredible. So okay, when Safari was on here a few weeks ago, she talked about doing a pilot. So I didn't even realize that the Of Love shows had a pilot. And for those of you who don't know, a pilot is basically putting the idea of a show on film, but not doing like a full season, maybe just doing like an episode that you're not going to actually use, but you're basically documenting the idea of the show for purposes of pitching to the network or pitching to a production company or something like that. Would you say that's a good way to just yeah. to say and what
the way,
a pilot is?
The way this worked was we pitched the idea to VH1 and they said, okay, we'll give you a pilot. And then we had to figure out how to do a pilot for an elimination show, kind of encompass the entire season and find all the funniest moments that you would in that and then present it without blowing the show. I mean, you can't do that. So we did a really fun, the pilot was really fun. First, and I hate to say this because it's reality TV. First, I wrote a script of like what the whole pilot would be, right? And then I broke that down into, okay, on day one, we're going to have 3 days to shoot this thing in a house. We're going to cast, I think we cast 12 girls. And basically the way it worked was we had them all come in. They met Flav. They got their nicknames. They went out into a backyard barbecue that was secretly a challenge. And based on what the girls were eating out there, it was either stuff that Flav liked or didn't like. Based on what they were eating, he then said, okay, everybody come inside. We're going to have an elimination. We had an elimination ceremony. And some girls were sent home from this mansion that we had rented for the weekend. And the girls were crying for real. And then we kind of knew we had something. So then over the next couple of days, we just shot reality of them living in the house. But then we did all these mini challenges. So we had like, it looked like we had 12 challenges shot. And they took about 10 minutes each. And we had Big Rick hit the girls for their grills. And we had their parents come to the house. And we just did all of that in a 3-day period and then cut it down into an hour that looked like it was the whole season.
Wow. That's incredible. That's amazing.
It was quite a piece of work.
Wow.
And Michael Hirschhoff, who was running VH1 at the time, he was waffling and waffling and waffling, didn't know if he wanted to do it. And then at one point he was laying off the tapes. He was in a control room at VH1 and they were laying off copies of the tape so he could take it to a meeting or something. And he said, everybody who was working came and stood around the tiny little monitors and watched the show. And he was like, okay, I'm going to buy the show. That's what I was told by him. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Was there any other networks that you guys were considering? No,
we were not shopping anywhere because we had just signed the big Surreal Life deal with VH1.
Okay.
And they paid for the pilot. You know, if they hadn't picked it up, we would have taken it somewhere else or tried to take it somewhere else.
Okay.
But also, the other shows, like Rock of Love did not have a pilot. I Love New York did not have a pilot. None of the other shows needed a pilot because Flavor of Love was the pilot.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So they knew that with these great characters like Brett, like New York, whatever, that we could go ahead and do the show and people like yourself would come and be great characters too, just like they have the other shows. So, not to say you weren't yourself, but...
Right. I get what you're saying, though. Yeah, absolutely.
You worked.
This is true. This is true. The horns came out.
Yeah.
So when you guys started talking about doing Rock of Love, was Brett Michaels always your first choice? Because a few of the girls who've came on here told me that when they were auditioning or when they found out they had gotten the role, the part for Rock of Love, so a few of them thought it was going to be Tommy Lee. There was a few of them weren't sure. Was it always going to be Brett Michaels or did you guys have other rock stars in mind?
We had a little list, but we met with Brett first and he was game and he was perfect. So we just went with it.
Oh, so you guys didn't even try out anybody else?
No, wow. Didn't even meet anybody else. Wow. They were on a list of meetings to have, but Brett, I mean, he's the epitome of Rock of Love.
Yeah, he really, really is. You know, Brett, it's so interesting because I think about all of the rock stars that I loved growing up and even like the hip hop stars as well. I mean, Flav was just such a standout character and he was just so perfect for that. And I always tell people like if that show had flopped, we probably wouldn't even have a Rock of Love or any of the others. So he really set the tone and he set the bar really freaking high. But you know what? Brett Michaels met that bar and then some because he was so perfect. And what I think was really great about Brett is it was a very sexually charged show. And this was obviously like pre-Me Too. And I feel like everybody really kind of walked that line, but walked it perfectly without going overboard. I thought that Brett was really, he did a great job of being like really fun and silly, and his whole thing about like everything turned him on. But it never crossed a line of being inappropriate or being offensive or anything. And that's what I thought was so incredible. That's why the show can air today post Me Too, because it just rode that line perfect and Brett was great. And the other thing I think is so great about Brett is even after the show, he never had a negative word to say about any of the girls. He always spoke really respectfully. And I feel like in this show, it could have been like really easy to be like, oh, these girls are like groupies, they're whores, they're sluts, whatever. But that just didn't happen. The girls were not ever degraded. They were just as much a part of the action as Brett was. And I thought that was just the coolest thing. And there's some rock stars, I will tell you, that I've met without naming names, that like you find out, oh, actually that guy's a douchebag. And thank God you guys didn't get a guy like that. That could have ruined everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have let that happen simply because you had you had a bunch of adults running the show. You know, I mean, Chris was married, has kids. I'm married, have kids. But we had a you know, the team of story producers was more female than male, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
The people that you were interacting with every day was a team of women. You know, almost all of them, the segment producers and the story producers, almost all of them. So, you know, everyone was very mindful of that. We wanted the show to be, you know, edgy, but not icky.
Right.
And really what it comes down to, too, is the show isn't about Bret Michaels. The show is about all you girls. Rock of Love was about you girls. Flavor of Love was about the girls. You get to know them much more than you get to know the main character. The main character is the centerpiece, he's the prize, but it's everybody else that the show is really about. You know, that is where the discovery of the character is and all of that. We learn who you are, not who Bret Michaels is. We know who Bret Michaels is, or we think we do anyway. We did not look just to make salacious TV. I mean, the TV was salacious, I'm not going to lie, but we wanted it to be funny first, and you can't be funny if you're being mean all the time.
Right, right. And
that's,
you guys,
Bad Girls Club is not funny.
Right.
And it was not supposed to be. It's called Bad Girls Club. You're going to get the baddest girls to come in and everybody's trying to prove they're the baddest one. It's like, it's not funny. It's just
intense.
You're watching to see them fight each other.
Right.
So,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you guys literally have of love in all the titles. So yeah, there has to be that element.
Romance. There has to be heartbreak. There has to be love. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So, so let me ask you this: of all the girls on Rock of Love, and also I'll say of the girls on Flavor of Love as well, who were some of your personal favorites? Like, what girls were like the most fun to work with, or they just like made it happen? Who were some of your favorites of the females?
Well, New York,
100%. Yeah.
Obviously, Tiffany is very dear to my heart, and she's a phenomenal character. I've loved working with her. I've done, you know, all of her shows that were under 51 Minds. I did, and was there holding her hand in I Love New York 1 when she didn't have a pilot, so she didn't know what was coming, and she didn't know that she was going to have to do all this copy and all this host work, you know, and I didn't know that she didn't know that. So when we first tried to do it, it was a disaster, but we got through it and she, you know, learned the ropes and she became, you know, a star. So she was great. Hoops, Nikki Alexander was really, really, really wonderful to work with. But I mean, all the girls on those casts were so good. You were great. And really brought, you were a great villain. I'm just going to say it. You were a great villain in Rock of Love. You had a way of delivering lines with this evil little smirk on your face that worked on camera so well. Everybody knew that you were trying to needle somebody when you were trying to needle somebody, and it was perfect for TV. Everybody was great. I'm trying to think of somebody who drove me crazy on one of those casts.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, was there anybody in particular that was difficult or like just didn't play along or anything like that?
Yeah. Monique was really, really awful.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Counterproductive and not funny. And
I got to be honest. I want to interject. I had Larissa come in. She actually lives here in Las Vegas, where I live. So she actually came in person. She's a hardcore woman, but she's also very, very delightful. I really like Larissa a lot, aka Boots. We talked about Monique a bit, and from the perspective of a fan, where I'm going to put myself right now, watching that, I mean, I loved all those girls, and Monique, I wasn't crazy about how she came across. And to compare her to Sharon, like, I love Sharon Osbourne so much, and she's so warm, and even Ricky is warm. Monique came across to me as like a little bit cold, a little judgmental, and at times a little cruel to the girls. And she seemed like, to me, she came across, and I've said this on the podcast before, she came across like she was, not that she was trying to better the girls, but that she thought the girls were beneath her. And that was the vibe I got from her. And that came across through on the TV set. So it's interesting to hear you say this, that that's how it was.
She was that way with me and my staff too.
Oh.
And that way with the network. And you never saw her on VH1 again.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's
they paid her to go away. Actually.
Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. That's crazy. Wow.
She went and got an Oscar.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, she's done other really great things as well, but I mean,
character that is exactly who she is.
Interesting. Okay. And then
enough about Monique.
I'm sorry, go ahead. What was that?
Of the series, she was the most difficult person to work with.
Interesting. Yeah, that I 100% believe it based on how she came across on the show. What about as far as the guys? You guys had great guys on Daisy of Love and on I Love New York. I feel like those guys just really carried the show. I mean, New York is going to be amazing regardless, but they were so incredible as well. Who are some of your favorite guys from Daisy of Love and from I Love New York?
Well, you know, I have a special place in my heart for Ahmad and Kamal Gibbons, the brothers from Chance.
Of course.
And Ahmad's not with us anymore, but I did Real Chance of Love with them afterwards. And then I did a show called Legend Hunters, which most people haven't seen, but that was just me and them traveling around the world.
Oh my God, how fun.
That was fun. So they're like my little brothers and I love them to death. And Chance is such a, by the way, Chance has got a show on Zeus right now.
One more chance.
I was developing a dating show with him. He ended up doing it with Zeus, which is fine. I wish him all the success in the world. But have you seen the show?
I've been watching it. Yeah, it's really entertaining. One thing that it's amazing, it is beautifully shot. That was the first thing that caught my attention. It looks like a freaking film. The cinematography is gorgeous.
It is really well done. I was really skeptical because, I mean, he told me he was going to do it. And then within like a week, he was like, oh, it's done. It's all in the can. I'm like, what are you talking about? and they did it really fast. And I was incredibly impressed. It's funny. It's well shot. His brother Micah is great in the show.
I thought he did great.
They got New York to come and be in the show. It's just, I'm very impressed and very happy. People, your audience, if they love these shows, they should check that out because that is one of those shows.
Yeah, I think they have been actually. Everybody's been very, very excited about it. You know, everybody's itching for more and more and more from these characters. And Chance is truly a character. He's so entertaining. He's so funny and so such big energy. So yeah, I think a lot of the fans of these shows and this podcast have been watching.
Right. So I loved working with him. I loved working with 12 Pack. Dave was great.
Love Heat, Dave.
Heat was great. Why am I blanking on Heat's name now? What is
Jason?
Jason Rozell.
Yeah.
No, he was great. Oh, he was so funny. He wanted his own show so bad. He would call Scott and I every day at 51 Minds and leave messages on our machine saying he wanted to get to the point where we designed a show. He's not even aware of this. We designed a show and pitched it to VH1 called Betrayed. And basically it was a show where he was going to be the bachelor and we were going to spoof him the whole time. So the girls would be given a mission. Like today, somebody has to have herpes and tell him, and you complete your mission and then you get money for completing your mission if you didn't get kicked out. Right? So your job was to have this mission that was something awful, like your dad's in prison, you know.
It's like a punk
kicked kind out of the show. And the girl who came in first place won all the money. The one who came in second place won all the money. And the one who came in first just got heat.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Yeah, that's those two amazing. Are...
It was. It did not go because it was just too much of a... It was too much of a stretch. It was a long con, you know, in the vein of average or not average show of Joe Schmo that we would have had to pull on him. And it was, but it was hilarious. The tape's hilarious.
That sounds incredible. I would love to see that.
And we call it Betrayed because he would say things like that. His grammar was always awful in interview bites. So he would always add another extra ED to a word or yes, it's just the vernacular.
He had his own language.
A lot of words that came out of those shows that people don't realize.
Oh my God.
Romantical is not a word.
Romantical. Like conversate.
Conversate. We're all in agreement on this now.
Oh my God.
Of course, the you know, the ever standing, I'm not here to make friends.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. 100%. She's not really here for you. She's here for television.
For wrong reasons.
So funny. Speaking of getting their own show, that's another thing I wanted to ask you about. So one thing that I have become aware of through this podcast is so many of the cast members who have been on the podcast have said that they were going to get their own show. I know that I had a couple of meetings with Mark and Chris about potentially doing an I Love Lacey, like a I Love Lucy meets I Live in New York kind of thing. Another crazy redheaded woman.
Yep. I was very aware of those discussions.
Yeah. And I know Heather said that there was a I Heart Heather planned. I know 12 Pack had talked about talking to you guys about his own show. I'm sorry, what was that?
12 Pack of Love. We talked about that.
Yeah.
So the way it worked was this. I mean, we were just printing shows, you know what I mean? It's just like show. We would get the next show before the show was finished. It became so much that I couldn't run every show anymore. Like I wasn't in the field on Rock of Love 2 because I was doing I Love New York 1. I mean, it was just too much. So then I actually went back to the office and started covering the whole brand and running it all through post and going out in the field much less. I'd help design the shows in the beginning, develop them, but not go out as much just because I was living on the road and I was living in mansions in Encino and shit like that.
Yeah.
So we would look at all the great characters, and so many people were great characters, and we would be like, what can we do with these characters? You know, and obviously Legend Hunters came of that. The Entertainers show came of that. Megan Wants a Millionaire came of that. And yes, we did talk about doing I Heart Heather. We talked about, obviously, Daisy came out of that. But we talked about doing I Love Lacey something. There was something with Mr. Boston. We also talked about doing a show with just Heat and 12 Pack, kind of a buddy comedy. And we could have kept going. And that's why eventually I Love Money happened, because we're like, Chris was like, we got all these great characters. Why can't we have a challenge like MTV has a challenge? You know, and what we had always been doing in these shows is we've been making parodies of other shows. Like a lot of the other companies, like they're just ripping everybody off. We were not ripping anybody off. We were paying homage to these other shows. We were taking them and saying, what is the most ridiculous Bachelor we can do? What is the most ridiculous challenge that we can do? You know, and that was where it came from. You know,
it was
like we were doing giant Saturday Night Live sketches of those other shows. And yeah, I mean,
that's a great way to describe it. Yeah. And you guys made those shows fun. I mean, again, just only speaking from personal experience, I know that The Bachelor and Bachelorette and all that, I know those shows were gigantic. But I personally couldn't get into them. I tried. I watched it. I was like falling asleep. This is boring. And again, I know I'm on my own with that because the shows are huge. But, you know, that's why I was so into Flavor of Love, because it was a dating show, but it was just so much fun and so much humor. So, yeah, I totally get it, how you describe it that way. One thing I've always wanted to know, I wanted to know this during like my time on the shows. I want to know this after the shows, before the shows. I've always wondered this. How much of the decisions as far as like who is going to stay in the house, regardless if it was Flavor of Love, Rock of Love, Charm School, or what have you, who was really making the decisions as far as like who was going to go home, who was going to be sent home for eliminations, who was the winner going to be? Was that really Flav and Brett and Sharon and so on making the decisions of who would be sent home? Or was that the producers going, what would be best for the show, and then telling Sharon and Flav and Brett, this is what we want? Or was it a collaborative thing? How did that work?
It's a collaborative thing. It really depends. On the Of Love shows, because so much of it is about real romance and, you know, real attraction. I mean, we know, you know, as much as I do, that the things that go on in the house are real. You know, I mean, there are relationships that evolve out of those, right? Yep. And that get carried on outside of the show, but definitely get carried on inside of the show.
Yeah, definitely.
So I couldn't just walk into Brett or Flav and be like, okay, so this girl's going home and this one's staying and this one's going to win and these are all the losers. And I couldn't do that. So I would go in and I'd be like, okay, Flav, for example, let's just start with Flav. Who are you feeling? Who absolutely has to stay? Right? And he would point out four girls that absolutely had to stay. Because that's in the 2 days time or the 8 days time or the whatever, how long? He only gets to know so many girls and only so many opinions change. And I'd say, okay, who absolutely has to go tonight? And he would tell me. And then I'd say, okay, then let me work with all the rest. Mm. And that's how we do it, because he doesn't know all the stories that are going on inside the house, right? The story producers do. And they have some say because they're going to have to put these episodes together. And that information needs to be relayed to Flav, and it needs to be relayed to Flav on camera. It can't be that I go and tell him, this girl said this off camera and this girl said this when you weren't in the room. He has to either know that information or not know that information. And if he doesn't know the information, I can't then have it be that he magically is eliminating somebody for some reason that he doesn't know.
It wouldn't make sense. Yeah.
So it all has to really come from them. And then you get some hosts, you know, like Sharon is a consummate professional, right? She comes in, she is on call, on her call time. She hits her mark. She says what she's supposed to say. She says it well. She says it with that accent. She says it with conviction, right? And she's wonderful. Right? She did not really want to be so involved in the, like, who's charming and who's not. Right?
Okay, interesting.
Right? Mm-hmm. She had her opinions, and we respected her opinions, but she wasn't dying to be like, no, this person goes, this person stays. She wasn't, right? So it really depends. When there's really hearts involved, it becomes more of a real thing, because those, you know, I mean, Brett was not going to let Daisy go home day one.
Right.
And you know, and Nikki Hoops, who won season one of Flavor of Love, he didn't really get to know her until like day five.
Mm-hmm.
Let him just go, I don't even know her, let's just kick her out. Then we would have lost her.
Yeah.
And she turned out to be a great winner, you know? So that's where the producing comes in. So many people say this is all fake. The producers do it all, make it all happen. It's like, it's not all fake. The nuts in the box do what the nuts in the box want to do, right? And that is the story that we're capturing. That's the reality. Yes, it might be this reality in a mansion that doesn't belong to Flavor Flav, Encino, that we've all put together and dressed with a crazy art department. Yes, that's not all real. But what the girls are doing in the box is real.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great way to summarize the whole thing. I get asked a lot, you know, were those shows real? Were they scripted? Were you guys told what to say? Blah, blah, blah. And I've addressed it a few times on the podcast. And from my own perspective, how I've kind of described it to people is it's not real from the perspective of it is an artificial environment. You know, mm-hmm. It wouldn't be a real life scenario where like 20 girls, you know, want to date one guy unless you're, you know, into polygamy or something. But as you said, everything that happened within this artificial environment was 100% real. The interactions and the fights and the friendships and the romances and all of that. So yeah, absolutely. One thing that that I became aware of just through doing this podcast, you know, I mean, we all have our own personal perspectives on things, and most of the ways that we see the world is through our own personal perspectives. And sometimes you think about other people's perspectives, other times you don't. And as far as my experiences on the shows, I really only thought of it from my personal perspective, which was I had a blast. I had so much fun. I went on there. I purposely did a character. I tried to emulate what New York had done and just kind of be like the rock and roll New York. And I had such a great time on the shows. And so I sort of just assumed that everybody had a great time on the shows. And then I started bringing people onto the podcast. And most of the guys, it's interesting. Most of the guys say they really liked it. I'd say 80% of the girls said they had a great time. But of anybody who didn't have a good time on the shows, it would have been the girls. And I'd say maybe about 10 to 20% of the girls I brought on this podcast said, you know what, that was kind of a miserable experience. And I was kind of traumatized by the whole thing. And I was like, wow, I didn't even know that was a possibility that there was people that didn't have fun. Cause like I had so much fun. How could everybody else have not had fun? But then when you really kind of break it down with them and really analyze everything from their perspective, you're like, okay, I get it. Some of the girls, for instance, they were really not aware of how reality television worked. And I feel like they treated it almost more of like a documentary. So they would really fall in love with these guys and they would get their hearts broken. And some of them, I will be honest with you, who came on to the podcast did feel like they were exploited or they were taken advantage of and that sort of thing. I would imagine these are all things that you already know. Do you have thoughts on that? Like, do you ever, to the people who didn't have a good time, what do you say about that?
I say, sorry. You know, I mean, we told you what it was going to be like. There's not a single person that I didn't say, hey, this is exactly what's going to happen. When you were in your hotel room in casting, the final phases of casting, I came in with another producer and sat down and said, okay, tomorrow you're going to go into a house. There's going to be all these cameras. Don't look at the cameras. You're going to be told where to go and what to do and how long you were going to be in there and how often you would. I broke it all down, right? And look, that is not for everybody. But you're saying 80% of the girls liked it and all the guys liked it. So I got 20%. Those are the people that probably this was not the experience for them to get into.
Right.
And they may have thought that they should get into it. They may have thought that they were right for it, but I would just say it's not for everybody.
Right.
I'm going to go be on a reality show. I'll go produce a reality show, but it's not for me. It's just not who I am. And I would say it's not for everybody, but it sounds like our average is pretty good.
Very much so.
For anybody who did feel exploited. And I know, look, part of what happens in these shows too is people are not all self-reflective. People don't all know how they come across in the world or how they come across on camera or how they, any of that, right? What we do is we accentuate people's real characters, right? People come in and they give us the material. They give us the reality of who they are. And we inflate that, but we very rarely in reality TV overall, and I would say almost never on my shows, do we make somebody the opposite of what they really are.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
We don't have the ability to do that. You're giving us the raw material. We can only work so much with it. Now, do some people feel like they're represented incorrectly? Well, yeah. If you're not that bright and when you get eliminated, you go out the wrong door and then come in and then go out the wrong door again and then go to another show when you already have known this is what happened on the other show and you go and you're doing it and then you do it on that show too. And we're not going to play that because we don't want you to feel exploited.
Right.
Funny. It's funny. It's a comedy. And that's hilarious. And you really did it.
Yes. Yeah.
So I understand that some people feel exploited, but they're usually the people that did something like poop on the floor. And I didn't make you poop on the floor.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Or, so, I mean, you know, I will throw myself on the sword for this one. I, as I said, I had a great time on the shows. I think that how I came across, I was happy with only because that was how I intended it to come across. It's funny. I get people who came up to me like, they're like, man, those editors really like edited you to look bad, didn't they? And I'm like, no, it wasn't the editors. That was all me.
Yeah, and you came in with some plans.
Yeah, I had an agenda. Absolutely. And so
you were gonna start some shit.
Right. But there was one moment where I wasn't on my game and I feel like I did lose control of myself for a moment. And I am sorry that I did it because it wasn't part of my plan. And Vegas? That was the Vegas. Yep. With like, I was like, let me drink all the Jägermeister. What could possibly go wrong? You know, so that sucked. And I'm watching it back. I'm like, I still am like kind of cringe at that one. However,
falling off the bar was the funniest guy.
It was great TV. And the thing is, nobody forced me to drink alcohol. That was very much 100% my decision and my decision alone. I didn't have to drink all of the Jägermeister.
Nobody told you to climb up on that bar and crawl across it. Nobody told you to fall off it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not my fault. I got in a fight with gravity and gravity won.
Who's the other girl who was there?
Brandy M.
Yes.
Yes.
When she put the barf and squeezed out through her fingers. Oh.
That was so brilliant. And you know what? Brandy M came on the podcast and she had a great attitude about all of it. She had a fun time. She had a wonderful attitude about it. And we both kind of laughed at each other for that whole bit, which was definitely very much real. But you know, the other thing too is that people should know is when we sign up to do these shows, you guys give us a contract that's like thick. And I remember reading it and going through it. And like, there is a whole entire section that's like, you agree that we have the right to like embarrass you, humiliate you, make you look stupid, right. Make you look like a drunk idiot. Like I'm like, I guess they're going to make me look stupid and an idiot and like a drunken whore and all that because it says in the contract. So I have a feeling people
have that in the contract just to protect ourselves.
Right. Yeah. Well, and also like just to let it be known, like this is what you're getting. What you're signing up for. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was fair from that perspective. I always talk about this on podcasts. I'm a huge fan of Survivor. Aside from all the 51 Mind shows, I would say Survivor is probably my other reality TV addiction, like super hardcore. I loved the idea of I Love Money because it did remind me so much of Survivor. What was you guys' inspiration behind that? And what I really also want to know is who of your production team had the honor of getting to try out all of the challenges before you guys started filming?
We have so that's funny. So I Love Money came out of, as I said earlier, we had all these great characters to the point where we couldn't keep making individual shows about each character, right? But there were just too many of them, right? So Chris, you know, had come from MTV, Road Rules specifically. And he was like, they have the challenge and it's just keeps going on and on. I mean, it's still going on.
Yeah.
And why can't we have a challenge? We've got all these great characters and we just have to do it in our brand, you know? So I think he was the one who said, so what if it's this? These people really came on, they came on TV originally for love. But what they really want is time on television and money. So let's give them what they want. Right. So we created a challenge based on that. That's why, I mean, I Love Money is you're going to get money. If you win, you're going to get money. Right. And you've got the paymaster and you've got the vault and you've got the checks and you've got your check is voided and you're sent home. And I mean, all of that was just, I mean, development. They sent me into a room with a couple other people and said, how is this all going to work? And then we come back and we pitch and they liked it. And yeah, went from there. And it was so awesome.
Yeah. It was
the challenges. We had a team, a guy named, Fred Burkhead, who is very big in challenges and does all the Titan games and he does everything. There's Fred Burkhead and a couple other guys that do that thing. Design the challenges, and he did all the challenge stuff and all of that. He was really wonderful. So he had a team and they put everything together. I was there when they were doing, I was there for pre-production for the first season because I developed the show and come up with the challenges. So I do remember the very first time I saw the chicken apple shoot fire a chicken and it flew like a naked baby spinning through the air. And I was so pleased. It was going to work.
So funny.
I don't know if the pole was going to work.
Oh my God, that was hilarious. So one of the things I talk about as far as I Love Money 3, my season, unfortunately, people didn't get to see that, but there was one challenge that stood out that was freaking terrifying. It was a monster what you guys designed. And I've talked about it on the podcast before, but basically it's the challenge where we were like on the side of a mountain and I feel like we were like 200 feet above the ocean or something insane. And you guys had built this platform that was maybe about 2 feet wide that went, I mean, I don't know, 30 feet like outside the cliff. Like you're having to crawl blindfolded across it. And we had a harness and we were strapped in so that if we fell off the thing, we would be dangling, you know, we wouldn't fall to our deaths, but still who wants to dangle 200 feet above the ocean with rocks and everything. It was freaking terrifying. And I remember just being in the van and pulling up to it and just looking at it like, cause it was like a giant crane and everything holding up this platform above the ocean. I'm like, holy crap, this is like no messing around. That was insanity. That was insanity. I can only imagine you guys having to like try that out. It was terrifying. Right.
Well, that would be Fred's team. I would not have gone.
Yeah, it was terrifying, but so amazing at the same time.
Yeah, that was a good challenge. I remember.
So Matt, what are some of the, what is a crazy thing that has taken place on these shows that we might not know about?
There was crazy antics all around. I mean, things that you do think you know about that you don't, like what really happened when something pooped on the floor. Was just, I mean, the camera coverage. There was a whole cut of that with all 12 cameras and everybody talking about it and everything before it was very, very watered down for television. And when you looked at that on television, you didn't think it was watered down. So you can imagine what it was really like.
Wow,
craziness. I came off the floor because I was the man behind the curtain next to Flav. And I didn't know what had happened. And I went into the control room. JJ, you remember JJ, the AD?
Yep.
He goes, something pooped on the floor. I said, what do you mean something pooped on the floor? He said, something pooped on the floor. I'm like, JJ, there's no animals on set. What do you mean something pooped on the floor? And he pointed to one monitor and something was on the monitor. And he goes, something. And he pointed to another monitor and there was the poop on the stairs. Poop on the floor.
Wow.
I had a whole who's on first moment about that.
You couldn't write the stuff. Or like the skunk that came in during, was it Daisy Love?
One of the best. Yes, that was Daisy Love when the skunk came in and 12 Pack decided he was going to catch the skunk and get rid of it. If you haven't seen that, you can go online and find just Daisy of Love Skunk. And you can watch the whole scene. It is one of the most brilliant scenes in reality television. And it all just really had, like, it was the middle of the night. Like, they didn't know the skunk was going to come in the house. We didn't catch a skunk and let it in the house.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't cast. No,
does that happen? I've pitched doing that. Because it was so funny. But yeah, I mean, yeah,
amazing.
Can't write that.
Yeah, the reality gods were definitely like shining down upon you guys for sure.
That's what so much of the magic of the show is. It's like we think we have a plan. We think we know what the story's going to be. And we're always just ready to throw it all away because what you guys give us and what happens out there, what the reality gods give us, is so much better than anything you can come up with. That's why people love reality TV. It's like, oh my God, did you just see what happened? You know, you don't get that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Oh, amazing. So, I know that everybody is super excited that New York, she did the Reunited on VH1 just recently, and everybody's super excited. So the question that I keep getting from fans of all these shows is like, are they like testing the waters? Are they thinking about doing these shows again? You know, it seems like such an obvious platform. Like the audience is already there. It's going to be like it would be a no brainer for a production company to come along and be like, you know what, everybody loves these shows. Let's pick back up again. Do you foresee anything like that happening in the future, or do you want to revisit any other castmates, or can you even say?
Look, I mean, as I said earlier, I was trying to work with Chance right up until he went and did this thing with Zeus. We were going to send him. What was ours? Ours was called Chance at Romance, and we were going to send him around the world to different places to meet girls and have to meet their parents and date these girls all around the world. So would I want to do more of these shows? Of course. But VH1 or Viacom has to really decide if they want to do the shows again. I know that they love I Love New York. They come and they bring it back and Flavor of Love for the Valentine's Day, you know, Valentine's Day week and play it all week long. And Rock of Love too, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
It's really up to them if they want to do more of these shows. If they do, I hope they call me because I would love to run. You know, I mean, it was the most fun I've had doing any shows was that string of shows. It's the kind of TV that I love to make. And I hope that they come back and want to do it again. They should. I think that they are, you know, since they are bringing things back, there is this huge audience out there. People still tell me that these were their favorite shows. You know, kids, right after I left 51 Minds and I was working with A. Smith for a while, kids would come into the office, you know, the new interns or the PAs, they'd be like, are you the Flavor of Love guy? We had parties to watch your shows. You know, which is, I mean, so touching to me. You know, they just gotten out of college. And when they were in college, they were getting together every Thursday night or whatever it was to drink beer and eat pizza and watch the shows together. People don't do that anymore. You know?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah, 100%. I agree with everything that you said. And the thing that is really cool about it to me is particularly this year, 2020, has been a hell of a year with everything going on in the news and the pandemic and lockdowns and then the stuff with in politics. I mean, it has just been absolutely nuts. And what's really cool is I've had so many people either sending me emails or they comment on the YouTube videos on the Talk of Love podcast or they talk on the Instagram pages, just, you know, wherever social media is talking about these shows. And the one reoccurring comment that I keep seeing over and over again is people go, man, these shows got me through the pandemic. The podcast got me through the pandemic. People are going to Rock of Love, Flavor of Love, I Love New York, all of these shows for their sense of escapism. And so I just think that's really incredible. And furthermore, I've had so many people say, I suffer from depression. I suffer from anxiety. And then of course this year made it worse. And so if I'm having, you know, my depression moments or anxiety moments, I'll go turn on the podcast and watch these castmates, or I'll go watch reruns of Rock of Love or Flavor of Love. And that to me is so cool because it tells me like this wasn't just like a superficial show just for a quick laugh. Like these shows really impacted and are still currently impacting people in a very positive way. And that just makes me so happy. And I can only imagine for you as well.
Yeah. No, it's really kind of it's my career. It's kind of everything, you know, that those really work, that people really remember them and love them. And the audience is still there and Viacom should bring it back. I mean, if you look, I know that since Chance has done that thing on Zeus, the show on Zeus, that they have, Viacom has pricked up their ears because it's getting more attention than a lot of shows that are on the air on Viacom.
That's great. So great. So
they bring it back. I mean, I would love for them to bring it back. I would love for there to be a place for me to go and pitch these shows again, because without Viacom, I mean, there really isn't a place. You know, they're MTV, they're VH1, they're CMT, they're BET, they're all of those. That's Viacom. And without them saying, yes, we'll do these shows again, where am I going to sell them? To Bravo? Bravo doesn't do that.
Right, as you were saying.
They just don't. It's not their brand. So
that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. So I talked a little bit about your current production company in the intro before you came on, but I want to hear it from your mouth. So you are currently with a production company called Left Hook Media. And is that your company?
Yeah. So Scott and I, Scott Tatey, who is my partner in Left Hook Media, he was an editor on Flavor of Love 1 and then quickly rose to the ranks and became an executive producer. He ran seasons 2, 3, 4 of I Love Money. He ran Ton of Cash and among other shows, but he was out there on Rock of Love. He was in the field, I mean, with us in the first house. And he was in the bays for everything till 3 o'clock in the morning with me making funny stuff up. So we got together. We realized that the best time we had in our career was when we were together, the most fun we had, the most creative, you know, we create together. So we founded Left Hook Media And it was given a deal by Endemol Shine North America, which bought 51 Mines, which Chris runs. So
amazing. It's so cool. Yeah. I love seeing that.
Good to have friends that you know, you've worked well with in the past who are, you know, doing great things. So, yeah, we were there for 3.5 years. Now we're out developing independently, but we did some fun shows in that time. Summer House, which is in its fifth season. And yeah, we did some stuff for MTV. We did a show called The Almost Impossible Game Show, which only aired a few episodes, but was a lot of fun. We had a show called The Staten Island Hustle on CNBC, which you can still watch online, which is a broad comedy, business comedy. And it was, you know, it's about a bunch of guys from Staten Island trying to get rich. Very funny show. Yeah, so we've had a lot of fun. The company, you know, has had some modest success, and but we've had a lot of fun making the kind of TV we like. We would love to make more of the kind we used to, because it's not the same.
I can totally imagine.
It's comedy, but it's not. There's nothing like that of love magic.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Well, Matt, thank you so much for taking the time out to come and sit down and chat with me. And it was so much fun talking to you. If anybody wants to find you online or follow you or like learn more about you or Left Hook, how can they do that?
They can just go to lefthookmedia.com, or they can go to our Facebook page, Left Hook Media, or our Instagram, Left Hook Media.
Awesome. I will put all of that information and links in the description below this video on YouTube. So anyway, well, Matt, thank you again. I really appreciate it. And I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Good to see you, Lace.
You too, Matt. Have a good one.
Okay, you too.
That was so cool. That was amazing. It's really funny because I know you guys have a lot of questions as far as these shows go that are like, it's questions that I can't necessarily answer, that I've always had the same questions too. So it's really cool to get some insight from the actual producers themselves. You know, we can get a lot of information from the cast members, but the producers just have a completely unique view. They have a unique perspective that we cast members just would never get to have. So that was awesome. I'm so happy and grateful that he came in. So anyway, I just want to say thank you again to you guys for being so supportive and so kind, keeping this podcast going. You guys rock. And I also want to give a shout out to the contributors. Thank you guys so much for always being so supportive. And literally this podcast is going because of you guys. So don't forget to click on the description below and you will find the link to donate a toy as far as the Toys of Love campaign for children in need for Christmas. And if you want more information on that, you can also visit my website, which is talkoflove.net. And there will be a section that you can click on called Toys of Love. And that will give you all the details about this. And also, if you want your shout out, if you do donate a toy, that'll give you instructions on how to do all of that. So also, if you want to become a contributor, just click on talkoflove.net/contribute. And from there, you can receive monthly Skype chats with me, which are really, really fun. I've really gotten to know a lot of you quite well by doing the Skype chats with you guys. You can get a video shout out from me. You can get the reaction videos of the Of Love shows and all kinds of other great stuff. So definitely check that out. Thank you guys so much. I just love you guys. I love all of your comments and how invested you are in this podcast. It really means a lot to me. I enjoy everything that you guys say. I read everything that you guys write, and I just appreciate you guys. So have a great one. Stay safe, wear your masks, and don't threaten me with a good time. Bye, guys.